As North Koreans mourn Kim Jong-il, the world wonders what's next. Yes, as the dear leader dies at 69, there will be a transition of power to Kim Jong-il's son, the baby-faced 20-something Kim Jong-un. And there's talk that the son might actually be a figurehead, that the military might take real power. But what about the people? Barbara Demick is Beijing bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. She's author of the terrific book, Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea. It tells the stories of six defectors. And Barbara joins us via Skype after a long night of reporting. Barbara, thank you and welcome.
Thanks so much.
And the images from your book have stayed with us. People grounding tree bark into flour to eat, picking kernels of undigested corn from animal excrement again to have something to eat, while they have, you know, the picture of the dear leader on their wall and they adore him. What's your sense of what's going on inside North Korea with the people today?
Well, there's certainly these public displays of grieving, the chest pounding, the, you know, the heaving sobs. But it's sometimes hard to tell if people are really crying because they feel so sad about the death of this man, or if they're crying because of themselves and they're worried about, you know, what happens next. And, you know, even looking at some of the images on CNN, I wasn't sure if there were really wet tears there. You know, but I can tell you this for certain: Kim Jong-il was not beloved in the way that his father, Kim Il-sung, was. He presided over a very difficult period and many, you know, deaths and famine, the sort of lapse of the country into irrelevance and poverty. So he's not really a popular figure, no matter what you're seeing on TV.
Really? Tell us more about that, because, yes, you spoke to defectors, and, you know, these were people who left there. We know there are hundreds of thousands of people who are imprisoned because, you know, it could be something as little, as you write, as refusing to put the dear leader's picture on the wall. But there's a psychological aspect here. He's been diagnosed from afar by Western psychologists as being a narcissist, and yet weren't there people sort of brainwashed to believe he was their dear leader and he was a demigod?
Well, you know, people really did love Kim Il-sung. It's funny, even with these cynical defectors, when I talk to them, they can still get misty-eyed about Kim Il-sung. But Kim Jong-il just never had his father's popularity. I think there's, you know, some genuine grief and people who cared for him, but there were a lot of people who were very angry, and it's, you know, they couldn't be fooled forever after what they went through in the 90s when more than 2 million people died of starvation. I think people have been pretty fed up with the regime, and I know that there are a lot of crocodile tears out there, faking.
The image that you painted, though, from the 90s, just terrible, terrible images. Children drowning a dog in a bucket so that they could have something to eat, people picking grass to eat. Is that still North Korea?
Yes, it's not that much better. Things improved around 2000 when they opened up the economic system and allowed some markets. But then Kim Jong-il really tried to bring back socialism the way it used to be and close down the markets. And that is, you know, part of what brought on the current economic crisis, and it's part of the reason he's unpopular. He failed to open up the economy in any which way.
And yet you write about, you know, his wild drinking parties with naked dancers. He reportedly bought $650,000 worth of Hennessy's cognac in a single year. He hired a sushi chef from Tokyo. We spoke to the pizza chef from Italy who worked for him and talked about, you know, this is the luxury. Did the people know that?
No, the people have no idea about his Epicurean habits. In fact, the propaganda machine has always talked about how he would eat simple meals of potatoes and eat with the soldiers. People had no idea. And actually, the North Koreans I've spoken to in recent years have said, oh, well, he seems to work so hard and we're concerned that he's losing weight. It was always portrayed that he was making great sacrifices for the people.
Yeah. Well, so what happens now, Barbara Demick? You know, it would seem that the leadership in North Korea, whether it's the military or the civilian leadership surrounding this young son, whoever ends up being in charge, would work feverishly to keep the North Koreans in the dark. I mean, we're living in the age of the Arab Spring, and you know, people in North Korea, they don't have the internet, although he did. So it would seem that would be the goal, to keep them from knowing the way that they live. And yet we hear that other countries are bracing for refugees. What are your thoughts?
Well, the new government is going to have a very difficult time because it's the same dilemma. They need to modernize their economy. They can't keep themselves hermetically sealed in the middle of this great economic miracle that is the rest of Asia. But they have to keep, they want money in, but foreign influence is out. And it's, you know, the basic dilemma for North Korea has not changed. They need to reform their economy.
Well, but those defectors that you met, and we know that you're scheduled to speak with some of them soon, some of them told you that they regretted leaving. They couldn't. I mean, I remember the story of the woman who crosses into South Korea and sees a flush toilet at, I think, an airport. She didn't know what to make of it. They couldn't fit in these other countries. I mean, there's an entire population of people that's psychologically damaged and not of this world.
Yeah, it's you know, if you think about Kim Jong-il's legacy, it's quite harrowing. You have a whole generation that's stunted. You have 18-year-olds who are, on average, 5 inches shorter than their South Korean counterparts, who have never used the internet, may have never heard of the internet. Yeah. And I think that's, unfortunately, Kim Jong-il's legacy.
Well, and yet, when they do get a glimpse, and it's just, you know, it's hard to believe that the world is going to be kept at bay much longer, but you write about one North Korean. It was as simple as seeing a picture of a South Korean worker with a ballpoint pen in his pocket. That's such an unimaginable luxury in North Korea that that was the light bulb moment for that one defector, like, oh, my God, workers have pens. I've got to leave. It would seem as if this is what, you know, one of the things that confronts the new leadership in North Korea.
You know, I was very struck by a man I met a few years ago, a coal miner, who said to me, you know, we North Koreans, we're not stupid. You know, we know what we know. We know what our neighbors know. We're just smart enough that we don't need to talk about it. And I think that is the case. People don't make a fuss because they think it's hopeless. They want to protect themselves and their families. But I think there's a decent degree of awareness that their economic problems are the result of their leadership.
Barbara Demick, Beijing bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times, also author of Nothing to Envy, Ordinary Lives in North Korea. We'll link you to our story. Terrific reading. Barbara, thanks so much.
Thanks.